welcome to this month's episode of the Portland Afoot Commuting Podcast about buses, bikes, and low-car life in PDX. I'm Lillian, your producer.
And I'm Michael, Portland Afoot's editor. Each month, Lily and I bring you three practical bits of news. Actually, this month we'll bring you two practical bits of news that matter to Portlanders who get around without a car.
And we give it to you in the time that it takes the average Portlander to get to work. This month we're talking about the cheapest way to get you and your bike to Seattle with free Wi-Fi, about the best ways to commute in Europe,
and about the history of Portland's amazing annual bike festival, Pedalpalooza. And we are joined by two famous Pedalpalooza pioneers, Timo and Ken, who are going to talk all about it.
I believe the term is infamous.
Infamous. The infamous pioneers of Portland's bike scene.
And we're going to ask our guests for their only on a bus stories.
Yeah.
Enjoy listening.
Have you guys heard about the Bolt bus?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, right.
I've been taking it, though.
Right. Goes to Portland and Seattle and Vancouver now for ridiculously tiny amounts of money. You can get to Seattle, if you book far enough in advance, you can get to Seattle for $7 and to Vancouver, BC for $15 one way, and then you can get back for
the same. That's so freaking cheap.
That's amazing. It's an amazingly cheap amount of money. And it goes up to a grand total of $17 to Seattle or $30 to Vancouver, BC.
That's cheaper than the Greyhound.
In Seattle, it takes 3.5 hours to get there. There are no stops. It happens four times every day. If there's a day, then it's happening four times on that day. And there you get free Wi-Fi, which works, unlike on Amtrak.
Amtrak claims to have free Wi-Fi, but then it's
the thing is there are only 50 people on this bus, and so it's not enough to crash the Wi-Fi, which is what happens every time on Amtrak. And your bike ride's free if you can do without the baggage. They'll check your bike underneath. Basically, they just throw all the crap underneath if it comes, and they'll be like, "Yeah, yeah, just throw it underneath." It's a very low-fi, low overhead operation, and it's actually run by Greyhound, and it's great.
This is run by Greyhound. See, that just added a negative to it, right?
Is that so?
I've actually seen one of these on the street.
Yeah, and it parks at the same place every day, four times, you know?
It seems like they still have to pay diesel. They still have to pay a driver. Mm-hmm. Or have they...
No, they failed to mention the robot driver.
they're on the way. They're going to be the first company to invest in the robot driver.
The Google Bus.
Right, exactly. Oh, and the other thing that is they don't check your bags. And the other catch is that if you show up on the day of, you have to...
Well, it's not that you can't check your bags, but you're checking them yourself.
Yeah, it's your...
So it's like...
And you don't have... It's not being guarded.
Not a carrier.
Like, on a multi-city trip, right. Greyhound's worrying about all that stuff for
Greyhound
you.
Greyhound doesn't really do that either.
Yeah, it does.
You have to go pick up your luggage and bring it to the next bus with Greyhound. Hmm.
Greyhound does nothing for me.
Greyhound does nothing except stop at a McDonald's so you can get a meal.
That is true. Greyhound, I do love those McDonald's meals on Greyhound. I always look forward to it because I get to get off the Greyhound. And the other thing I want to say about Bolt Bus before we finish is that our post about this was really popular. It got like 1,900 likes on Facebook. And I say this not to brag. It was kind of a crappy blog post. This is an example of what happens, the way people respond when you can improve service and lower the prices of things. People are very, very happy about that. And the story of TriMet for the last 5 years has been less service and higher prices all the time. People are very unhappy about this. But if TriMet could somehow solve the problem and offer greater service or better prices, then think of how happy people would be. It would be like this. Everybody would be this happy about a product that's provided by, you know, our local transit agency all the time. It would be great. And you know who else has done this? It's the city of Portland, Timo's employer, for bicycles.
What?
Yes. The city has made everybody so happy. And you know what? Everybody in this town is crazy about bicycles. Which brings us to our next topic. But the point is that if you can improve service and make people's lives better, they get very happy.
This is perfect transition.
Great.
Into talking about my top five subtle ways in which European cities are more walkable and built for walking compared to American cities. The number five reason is all pedestrian signals are timed. Rarely do you have to press a button and wait to cross the street.
You just walk up to the signal.
You just walk and wait.
There's going to be a pedestrian there.
Yep, there will be pedestrians. Number four is all wayfinding signs are at the pedestrian level rather than having to look at a sign that's for cars that says things like next right, but when they really mean like 500 meters down the road. And the times to get by to nearby businesses, both on wayfinding signs but also on advertisements, are always in walking minutes, not in driving minutes.
So that's like when you're in the city. Where are these advertisements? I'm not sure.
This is really anywhere in the city, I've found, especially in Berlin. But in other cities in Europe, I saw it as well. But even out of the suburbs where I lived in Berlin, the McDonald's wayfinding sign was at the pedestrian level out in the suburbs next to the car dealership.
Because...
And it had walking...
McDonald's wants those freaking sidewalk walking people to come to McDonald's. Yes. That's a big market of people.
Apparently, valuable Berlin, wallets. Yeah.
Do they have drive-in McDonald's in Berlin?
They do have drive-in McDonald's in Berlin. but they also have beer in the McDonald's in Berlin. Number three is all businesses put the nearest transit stops on their website and on their advertisements. And a lot of businesses actually even have little maps that show you where all of the transit stops are around them. And one business I visited's website actually had a video that showed you play by play how to walk from the transit stop to their business, because it was slightly confusing.
What kind of business was that?
It was actually a bar, but it had like
Did they show you how to walk from the bar back to the transit site?
That you have to figure out on your own, but that brings me to the number two.
In a straight line.
The number two subtle way in which cities in Europe are more walkable. Bars in Berlin will call out for the last train, not the last call for beers.
That's such a good idea.
So on weekdays, when the trains don't run all night, they will actually, if they're very close to a transit station, some bars, the bartender will call out, last train is in 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And...
Oh, wait, number one, drum roll.
Fantastic.
Number one, you can get the convenience store owner to open your bottle of wine so that you can drink it on your walk home because you are walking home.
Civilized. Did they charge a corkage fee?
Nope.
That's civilized.
Yeah. That's great. And we should say that this is because you just recently returned from Germany.
So I think we can start talking about the wonderful bikiness of June
that's
forthcoming. So to reintroduce our guests.
Yeah, go for it.
We have Timo.
Hello. I am a bicyclist who also works to promote people bicycling more for the city of Portland, as Michael already intimated. And I guess I've been involved in this Pedalpalooza thing since before it was Pedalpalooza.
And you've led the karaoke ride, sushi ride.
Yes, they all have more complicated names than that.
Yes. Timo is so infamous with Pedalpalooza that there was a ride led by someone else that was a ride to his ex-lover's houses for Pedalpalooza.
That is infamous.
And lots of people actually came.
Although not
we had to find out.
Not the person I was living with at the time. Go figure.
And Ken, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Ken Sutherland, and I've been a longtime bike advocate. Kind of grew out of really just wanting to... Well, originally it was probably just because, I want to live close to where I work. And, it makes sense to bike there. And then that just kind of became a long life, long-term goal of everywhere I was. And then moved here to Portland and helped do Bike Summer in 2002. And then start Shift out of that, 2003. And, yeah.
That's great. So we should define Pedalpalooza. So
yes.
Somebody, which one of you should raise your hand and define Pedalpalooza for us? Mm-hmm. All right.
Pedalpalooza is normally 2.5 weeks of bike fun, starting in June.
Ending in June.
And ending in June. It was generally timed so that the last weekend of Pedalpalooza would coincide with the critical mass, I think. When there was a critical mass.
Really?
That shows you how archaic this whole concept is. But this year is actually 3.5 weeks in celebration of the fact that it's the 10th anniversary of Bike Summer in Portland.
Which was 2002, and you mentioned that. Both of you guys mentioned this. What was bike... I'm a Pedalpalooza fanboy, not in the sense that I actually go to that many Pedalpalooza rides or... identify that strongly personally with Petalpalooza.
But he reads fantasies about Petalpalooza.
But I have like a wonky crush on Petalpalooza because I feel like it's this hugely important cultural phenomenon. It's one of the strangest, most impressive like social events that has come together like through the hard work of this core group of people who got together 10 years ago this year. And this huge number of people, including you guys, who have been important to the sort of development of Portland as this bike-friendly town, have moved into advocacy through the Bike Fun community and this the social bonds that have been built while having crazy, goofy rides with costumes and weird themes and so on, then develop into things that happen, like, you know, in City Hall and elsewhere. And so I think it's really remarkable, and I'd love to hear more about sort of how it come together, how it came together, and what the
like Zoom getting a RAC grant. That was, I think, a perfect example of like you never would have expected a bunch of people that ride children's bikes down a hill in the middle of the night to suddenly apply for a RAC grant for a public sculpture.
RAC being the Regional Arts and Culture Council, just a place where you park your bike.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's true.
But explain your wonkiness.
Unintentionally punny.
Yeah. I should, though, make a slight correction to your almost spot-on characterization, Michael.
Great.
Which is that although many people, I think, move to advocacy out of their introduction to Bike Fun, much of the Bike Fun was actually created from people who had done advocacy and were looking for more.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's good to know.
Yeah. And I think that that's exactly how this whole thing started. It was through Critical Mass where we all met. That was really only the bike outlet in Portland at that time. There was the Chunk 666 folk. I think the Belligerantes were still there, but were always a mystery, as they always are.
And these are groups of people who have fun by riding bikes around in strange ways.
Correct. And there was the Wheelmen, of course, because they've been around for 90 years or whatever. But other than that, and the BTA, of course, but other than that, there wasn't that much. So there was our Critical Mass, and that was where the other people sort of got together to meet and do stuff. And that was, you know, mostly born out of activism and whatnot. But there was a lot of people who wanted to have fun with that. And
well, I was just going to say that there was really the way I was introduced to it, because I was actually too afraid when I was a new Portlander, I was a 7-year Portlander by the time Bike Summer came, but I had never been to a Critical Mass, but I had been to a meeting that some friends I'd met through the BTA told me about, which was for PAWBOG.
Oh, PAWBOG, yes.
Which was the Portland Ad Hoc
Bicycle Advisory Committee.
No,
Working Group.
Ad Hoc Working Group, yes.
Yeah, well, we'll figure out that. Anyway, it was the people who wanted to be less aggro than Critical Mass, but more active than the BTA.
But was it PAWBOG mostly like people that just sort of met and talked about advocacy at a bar? Was that sort of the...
I think it was mostly a listserv.
As all things in Portland are.
Well, although
at
I
least
did
in
go.
2002.
I was at one of the meetings, and this was in 2001. I was at one of the meetings, and I remember Jamie being like very vociferous, as he's wont to be, and refusing to put direct action, which might include destruction of property, off the table. And so I thought, this is not the group I want to be involved with, and I kind of walked away. But I was already on the listserv at that point. And then perhaps you should pick up the thread here, Ken.
Well, from there, I mean, I think PAWBOG at that point kind of like fizzled, didn't it? I think it just kind of died. Yes. And then there was, the only listserv was Jamie's Bike Army listserv. Was that what it was called? I think it was called Bike Army. And I think that might have been the original PAWBOG listserv, but it just started becoming like a lot of rants and, you know, Critical Mass stuff, and it just kind of got annoying, actually. But anyway, we were like, so we were on that listserv, we were on Critical Mass, but we wanted to do more. And somebody, I can't remember who it was it Amy? Had the idea.
Amy Stork, might have been Arif Khan, might have been, who was... There was one other person who moved away from Portland, but was quite instrumental, who worked with City Repair. His name will come back to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Mr. Anonymous. We'll footnote you.
Anyway, they so we all wanted to do more, and somebody had the idea that back in San Francisco in 1999, the bike advocates there had all done had made Bike Summer, and had done a bunch of workshops and rides and stuff, and their intent, I think they did it for 2 weeks or 3 weeks is all, and then they just let it go, and somebody else picked it up. I can't remember who that
Chicago
was.
Maybe?
Was it Chicago?
So is the Bike Summer started in Portland? It was motivated by...
Bike Summer started in 1999 in San Francisco.
Okay, right. Great. Thank you.
And then it eventually developed into this concept that a different city would take it each year.
Got it.
But then I think Chicago did it the next year, and I think the next year it was somebody supposed to pick it up, and they...
No, the next year was Vancouver.
BC.
Right, it was the Summer of Velo Love. And 2002 was supposed to be New York.
Oh.
But you know what happened before 2002?
Right.
9/11.
So, somehow, people were busy with other things.
They didn't feel ready to pick it up, and so people in Portland...
That's right. Yeah.
So, Pelopolis is in some ways a child of 9/11.
Interesting you should point that out. I had not thought that. Because the other interesting thing is that there are a lot of groups like the BTA or Pedal Power in Santa Cruz which were born of the Iraq War.
Hmm.
So, it's kind of this...
And the political anti-oil sort of stuff?
Anti-war for oil, yeah. It's like, it's strange how, bicycles are kind of, which are such life-affirming and fun-providing things, and yet how they're so intricately intertwined with the opposite.
So then there was this this summer of bike fun had come got to a couple cities in the San Francisco, Chicago. Came to
Vancouver,
thank you, to Portland, and what did that consist of then?
So for us, it consisted of, was it 3.5 weeks or four?
It was all August.
And people went nuts with it. I mean, it got bigger than it ever had been in any other city, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we snowed, I think, every other city that had ever done it.
Although the interesting thing...
No, go ahead.
The interesting thing is that if you look at the original bike summer calendar, I think it was a total of, 78 events.
Yeah, but it was like a couple of days.
That's crazy.
That was
78 events
in 1 month is a lot of things, which now is in comparison to Pedalpalooza is like...
Right. Now how many are there?
If Pedalpalooza was a whole month long, can you imagine how many freaking events we would have? Okay. Yeah.
Is there 300?
I will tell you exactly how many are on the calendar right now.
Great.
And this it hasn't started yet.
Go ahead.
Is it while she looks that up? I would say that after that was over, and we were all exhausted from all the work we had done, but we were also really excited. It was almost like a letdown. We let ourselves rest for a week, and then we're the listserv started lighting up again. what are we going to do now? So we just had so much fun. We wanted to keep doing it.
Right.
So we got together and started, kept meeting. Post the event and started brainstorming about what we could do next and what we could do next, and we've eventually formed Shift out of that. Only a few months later, right?
Is it true that you guys actually got a beer made for the first bike summer?
Oh yes.
Yes.
On Full Sail.
They had
in Hood River.
We are drinking Full Sail tonight.
Unintentional
product placement.
I still have one of the empty bottles. I wish it was full.
I assure you the beer would probably not be good 10 years later.
And it would be empty again soon anyway, so.
It was their ESB, I think, that they discontinued. But they decided to brew it for us.
They brewed it just for y'all.
And they must have given us a crazy deal because of the last party of Bike Summer. And these were 22-ounce bottles, and they were selling crazy cheap for $2 or something. And then, we weren't getting rid of them, so they were $1 a bottle.
And then we were really embarrassed. We're like, how could we not sell this beer? We were promising them all kinds of crazy sales.
Yeah. Well, I think the issue with something like that is that in the beginning, you're all like, we drink so much beer during Pedalpalooza. We can just drink the Pedalpalooza beer, the Bike Summer beer.
We didn't know how much beer we drank at that time.
Yeah, that's
true. We didn't have Pedalpalooza. We have no history.
But I feel like now happen. He would promise that, and then he would just, people would forget to buy all the beer they thought they were going to buy, and then they would run out at the last minute and, like, go buy whatever's cheapest at the Plaid, you know? Like, I don't know. I feel like that's what would happen now with it.
Yeah.
But.
Well, a marketing scheme that did not go exactly as
planned. So, this year, at the current moment, Pedalpalooza starts on Thursday, and that's a week from now.
So, Thursday.
A week and a day from now.
June 7th.
Thursday, June 7th. And there are currently 252 events on the calendar. That will probably get bigger.
Because I haven't even put one on yet.
Me neither.
I want to mention the kind of where Pedalpalooza is going now is it's spread to a bunch of other different cities. So there's Vailapalooza in Vancouver now. Vancouver, BC. Vancouver, Washington is still included in the Portland one. And you even get a special little icon if you're in Vancouver, Washington, and you put it on the Pedalpalooza calendar. You'll get a little state of Washington next to your ride. London is doing a Pedalpalooza UK.
Didn't know that.
And
there's an American prom ride on that.
And there's an American prom ride, yeah. Which is pretty great. And is there anywhere else that has a Pedalpalooza anymore? So
wasn't Boise doing something to do something?
I don't know. I also wanted to say that anybody can lead a Pedalpalooza ride. There's still time to add it to the calendar. You could probably add it 20 minutes before you lead it to the calendar, and you may have some success.
I think more lead time.
It's better. Yeah, more lead time is definitely better. The best is to get it on the printed calendar, but that deadline is already passed. But if you want to add it to the shift calendar, you can
go to pedalpalooza.org.
Okay, so what are your guys' favorite rides that you've either led or been to?
Ever.
All of your Pedalpaloozas.
Ever.
Well, I led a ride called the Night of the Living Donut 2 years in a row. And my goal was to find how the most number of places you could still get donuts after 10 o'clock at night.
That's a great idea.
I kind of cheated a little bit because we met at the first year we met at Cup and Saucer on Killingsworth, and we rode to Annie's Donuts, which actually technically closes at 10. And so as the group is jollily riding along, I was like, okay, Steve, make sure everybody gets there. I'm going to blast ahead and catch them before they close the door. And they'd actually closed the door, but I knocked on it, and they're so friendly there that they managed to still serve us after 10. And that night we also went to Voodoo Donuts, which, you know, is what everybody thinks of as your after 10 o'clock donut place. And then
did you go to Tenali's?
We went to Tenali's, which was my favorite at the time. And so the next year, I had to really kind of scratch my head and push a little further. And so we went to some of the same places. We actually started out at Staccato Gelato, and there's a great picture on Bike Portland of the outside of Staccato Gelato, which is just mobbed. There were a lot of people there looking for donuts. But we actually got to make it an epic ride because the final stop after Tenali's was the Portland Airport because the Beaverton Bakery has a 24-hour... outlet.
Nice.
And so if you've ever traipsed through the Portland Airport after midnight with a bunch of drunken bike funnists and their dogs.
Dogs.
I don't know why the TSA did not want to frisk the dog. But we went in there, got our donuts, and then had a great time.
That's awesome.
Okay.
Well, not to kiss butt, but I think one of the most amazing rides was your first Bowie versus Prince ride, Lily, because it just really struck a nerve, and it struck a nerve so hard that, well, first of all, I went, like, total androgynous, like, it was kind of hard to tell. I was trying to hit both, and I think I did it, kind of. I was kind of going more
Bowie.
Didn't
I help you with your costume?
You did, yeah. We went to the rerun. We got a bunch of stuff there. But it struck such a nerve that there were, and this is one of the reasons why the ride was so damn awesome. There were 500, I think I counted 600 people on that ride.
It was
700.
Fucking,
I don't know.
Huge.
It was off the hook. But at the beginning, before the confluence, there were still, I counted before that, there was like 600 or 700 people. I don't remember the exact number. We were like We were like five blocks long, solidly packed of people. It was like the largest critical mass rides. It was
really I knew about Bowie versus Prince before I knew about Lily.
It was that epic.
We got a couple years ago, we got a spread in Portland Magazine just for the Bowie versus Prince ride. It was pretty exciting. But yeah, thank you.
And I've always wanted to make a board game. I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
Oh, should we mention if you're single? There is, like, no better time
it's true.
To be out there. It's spring, people on their bikes, sexy people on their bikes.
I have to say, one year? Is a ride.
Oh.
Even if you're not single.
Where is this going?
Well, our friend Ethan, who was also an original bike summer person, who actually designed the Shift logo, he had a tendency of riding his tandem bike solo. And on one ride we were on, he had the tandem plus a trailer trawling along behind, and there was a very lovely young woman who was riding her bike that got a flat that could not be repaired. And
wait,
so,
does this happen to be his wife?
Actually, no.
No.
Oh, sorry, Kelly, just ignore this part. I don't think that particular liaison went to liaison status, but it was very fun seeing... Her
they didn't,
on the back
even,
of the tandem.
They didn't even do anything.
Right. But her bike was on the trailer. She was on the back of the tandem. It was very. It seemed like a great.
That's a great bike dating tip. Yeah.
One of my favorite rides, which I never went on, was the original naked ride. Because during bike summer, we had visitors from Vancouver, our Canadian friends, and they apparently had done naked rides. This was before the World Naked Bike Ride was announced,
right?
Which I think was the following year, in 2003.
So to clarify, the World Naked Bike Ride is a worldwide movement of naked bike rides happening in cities all over the world. And the naked bike ride that happens in Portland that people probably know if they live in Portland because it's a big deal, 10,000 people, naked people on bikes riding through the streets at night... That is part of the World Naked Bike Ride. But this predates the existence of the worldwide network.
Well, ours came out of this naked bike ride that happened in Bike Summer.
Yeah.
Well, and the World Naked Bike Ride.
But then it just happened to coincide with the World Naked Bike Ride.
Yeah,
and
true.
Then we co-opted.
It's the power of a good idea.
And, yeah. And, I mean, Portland's never really... Because ours is so big. Ours is the biggest naked bike ride in the world. Yes, very much so. We tend...
Leaps and bounds.
We don't really listen to the date that the World Naked Bike Ride people announce. We're like, that doesn't work for us, so we're going to do it a week earlier, a week later, or 5 days later. So Portland sort of runs its own game. So I guess you could argue it's not really a World Naked Bike Ride. It's a
Portland. We still call it the World Naked Bike Ride. And
it's all in the same month.
And it's the biggest Pedalpalooza ride by margins that are uncontrollably high. Like, I mean...
It's the third largest bicycle event in Oregon.
Yeah,
I would say
it's very large.
Well, if you count out Sunday Parkways and Bridge Pedal,
and Zeclo Oregon is smaller,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
But the Canadians who were visiting for Bike Summer, because they had thrown Bike Summer the year before, they just got into the whole. Swing of things, and they started putting up posters saying naked bike ride happening, da da da, And it basically started from the end of bike summer party that was held at City Bikes. And, we were all dancing to the DJ, having a great time, drinking that bike summer beer. And then all of a sudden, I noticed there's nobody on the dance floor anymore. I'm like, what's going on? It's a great song. And then I noticed everybody's outside stripping down. And so I started to strip down, but then they all got on their bikes and left, and I was like, no.
You're not going to be the one naked dude trying to catch up with the other naked people.
Exactly.
I also was in your shoes, but I ended up...
Not literally.
I wasn't.
Well, I'd taken them off.
Yeah, exactly.
But then I rode home from the party naked, just in solidarity.
Of course you did.
Good.
Of course you did, Ken.
I missed the ride.
Yeah. Well, you're probably riding with Reverend Phil naked, too. If you want to ride anywhere naked, just ask Reverend Phil.
I didn't go home with Reverend Phil that night.
But it's Pedalpalooza, so you never know. The wonderful things that can happen during Pedalpalooza
and
are always up.
Really, who has not ridden home naked with Reverend Phil during Pedalpalooza? I think it's kind of... Everyone's got to check that box.
Rite of passage.
All right, I think that's all we have to say about Petapalooza for risk of making this very long.
We're going to talk about our sponsor for a sec. That is the great point-to-point car sharing service, Car2Go. The point-to-point car sharing service, Car2Go, is these little blue and white cars you've seen all around town, and they are available now. The fee to use them is $35. It's a one-time fee. It's not an annual fee, mind you. It's a one-time fee. You need to pay $35 one-time registration fee, and you can use these for the rest of their time here in Portland because it's just a setup fee. You can use, so you should definitely do that, and then you'll get a card in the mail, and you can wave it over the dashboard and just jump in the car as you need it to get somewhere.
Michael, do you have a commuting tip for us this month?
I do, yeah. The commuting tip of the month is, it's about TriMet's Lost and Found. Here's the tip. Do not call TriMet's Lost and Found when you've left your hat on the bus, as I have so many times. Do not call them after you lose your item, because they will not call you back. Even though they say that they will take your information, it does not matter. They will not call you back unless they have your item already. The only way that you get your item from the Lost and Found is to have it when your item is in there. What the Lost and Found does is they check to see if they have your item at the time they receive your message. If you call, you leave a message and say, hey, I would love to get my hat, and then they get your hat, they will not call you back. So what you need to do is keep calling over and over again. Even though the website says that you should only call once, you should definitely keep calling over and over again, because then they check it against their existing database. And that's how you'll get your thing back.
The only thing that this is not true for is if you leave your bike on the bus.
Okay, tell me more.
In which case you should call immediately after, because that gets called into dispatch, unlike Lost and Found.
That's an excellent point, right. And yeah, if there's another time-sensitive item, there was a time when somebody left their airplane ticket on the MAX and they actually tracked it down when they caught their flight. So they will do their best if you're lucky in that situation. But for a clothing item, definitely keep calling. Whatever anybody tells you, just do it.
Umbrellas.
Yes.
Like that.
Well, actually, there's a funny story about that.
Well, let's hear it.
This is, I would call this my only off the bus story, because I had a friend come and visit me one time, and you know, Portland occasionally gets sprinkly rains or something, and so she met me downtown, and she had this beautiful umbrella. I'm like, wow, you brought your umbrella to come to Portland? She's like, no. I was riding on the bus, and I saw it was raining outside, and I was like, where's your Lost and Found? They're like, you know, downtown. So she went to the Lost and Found. She said, yeah, I lost my umbrella. And they're like, what color? She says, it's black. And they're like, well, is it one of these? She's like, yes, that one, yeah. And she got a free umbrella.
I was just thinking that right before you said that. I was like, and if you lost your umbrella, probably just make up a color.
Lily, do you have any TriMet tweets for us?
I do have some TriMet tweets for us. So I, as someone who's recently broken their arm and is now a newly committed Portland transit rider, I'm a little bit, let's say, upset with TriMet today. So this tweet, I think I will start off with, particularly resonated with me, which is PDX MIE said, if we apply the old adage, if you can't say something nice to hashtag TriMet, my Twitter feed would be so empty. Lizpy says, TriMet Line 8 seems to be especially susceptible to the ever-receding bus problem. Transit Tracker says 2 minutes for 5 minutes. BB Breakdown says, this dude's BO is so bad, I swear he's legit sweating onions. Hashtag TriMet tragedies. But, in contrast to that, says, at the Davis Love says, somebody on the bus smells like Hubba Bubba Bubblegum. What a refreshing change. Dan Christensen says, overheard on my TriMet bus, mommy, that man is driving the bus, but daddy always drives.
Whoa.
And O. Coleman says, this bus is full of Girl Scouts, but no cookies. Life, a cruel jest. Those are our TriMet tweets for the day.
This got a little less dark.
I tried.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, I have to say, there's this thing about bikers and buses, because I was reading Adonia Lugo's blog, Urban Adonia, and she linked to another person's blog, and I started looking at it, and she, the other person, was a biker in San Francisco, and they asked her, why are you riding the bike? She goes, well, you know, San Francisco buses are the worst. And I think it just doesn't matter what your bus system is like. It's just where it is. If it's in the city that you live in, that's the worst bus system.
Yeah. Although I will say, I just got back from being a predominantly transit rider in Berlin. And so...
Very different experience.
It's a very different experience than being a predominantly transit rider in Portland.
And but did you ask any Berliners what they thought about
their
bus?
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
That
does the S-Bahn there, it stands for Schnellbahn, which means Fastbahn. And every Berliner will just be like, ah, oh, Schnellbahn, what a joke. It's not fast. And I just want to stare at them and blink. Like, really? You think that? And when I first moved to Berlin, I'd get there, and every station tells you how many minutes is, you know, on a little thing until the next bus comes, or the next train comes. And people always be like, ah, oh, 5 minutes? I have to wait 5 minutes? And they're like, inevitably, every single person I hung out with that was a Berliner would complain when it was over 5 minutes. And when I first got there, I was like, y'all need to stop complaining. And by the time I left, I was like, oh, 4 minutes!
Congratulations. Gone native. Usually we close by reading the Only on the Bus story from the Portland Afoot magazine, but tonight, since we have these guests and Ken has a story from his time in New York City, he's going to tell us a transit story of his own. And Timo, did you have one?
I have one from Mexico.
All right. Great. Well, we're going to hear these guys' stories, and it'll be the special edition of the Only on the Bus. Ken, you want to take it away?
Sure. My story actually involves just the subway. It's one of my favorite times on the subway in New York City. And my friend had just gone to, he'd been on a cruise in the Mediterranean. And it sounds weird to have friends who would go on cruises in the Mediterranean, but he was paid to like do it because he was doing it.
Anyway. Sweet.
So, and he knew I loved fezes for some reason. I've always had this infatuation with him. So he bought me this fez while he was out there. Now it wasn't a very nice fez. It was like, he didn't pay a lot of money for this fez. It was pretty basic.
Are you a fez snob?
You know, but no, but anyway, but I was so excited by it that that night I immediately just wore it all over town. And I'm like, And I went out late. It's New York City. You're always going out late. And so it's about 2:30 or 3 or something. I don't know. I'm coming back on the subway. And I get into this platform. I don't even remember what platform I'm on. But if you've ever been in the New York subway platform, they're really long. They're like 2 or 3 blocks long. And I'm on the far end of it. And it's just me and my ex. And there's nobody else on the entire platform. And it's always kind of a little spooky. I mean, I never get spooked very much, but it's kind of weird, just empty, cavernous space. And on the very other far end, suddenly, 3 gentlemen come down this stairway, very far off, all wearing fezes. And they start running at me. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. I'm like, oh, they're going to beat the snot out of me because I have this fake fez on. And they kept running at me, and they got, but I just froze, and they just got close, and they're like, what tribe are you? They were so excited that somebody else was wearing a fez. And I just had to sheepishly say, oh, I'm not in a tribe, I'm sorry.
Were they Shriners?
No, they were...
Those were legitimate pheasants.
They were
from
Egypt or somewhere.
Huh. Wow.
And they wouldn't let down. They just kept insisting that I had to be,
Why else would you be wearing a hat?
Right. These are annoying little hats we have to wear.
And that is our show. You can subscribe to the show at pdx.be/podcast. And send us any comments you have at podcast@portlandafoot.org.
You can spread the word about the show by searching for it on iTunes and leaving a review. That's how iTunes knows to recommend it to other people.
You can follow me at Anomalily on Twitter.
And you can follow Portland Afoot on Twitter, too. I'm Michael Anderson, your editor.
And I'm Lillian Kerbake, your producer. Thanks for listening. And remember to exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank your bus driver.
Thank you, driver.
Tall back Jesse Gaff brought down the house right naked and showing his lance at minibike summer, minibike summer. If you on a critical mass of cop tickets your ass. Well, that's a minibike
bummer,
minibike summer, yeah. Oh, when you're on two wheels, you know how it feels. Everything is just a whole lot of fun.